radio. What next? Technically, there was a security presence on the moat, especially given the official visit. But what did the security goons know about chasing boats? All their training was aimed at dealing with internal crises, and none of them were competent to go anywhere near an active node. She called them anyway, alerting them to what had happened. Then she called Sivaraksa, telling him the same news. "I think it's Weir," she said. "I'm going to try and stop him."
"Naki," he said warningly.
"This is my responsibility, Jota. Let me handle it." Naki ran back outside again. The closest elevator down to sea level was out of service. The next one was a kilometer farther around the ring. She didn't have that much time. Instead, she jogged along the line of railings until she reached a break that admitted entry to a staircase that descended the steep inner wall of the moat. The steps and handrails had been helpfully greased with anti-rot just to make her descent more treacherous. There were 500 steps down to sea level, but she took them two or three at a time, sliding down the handrails until she reached the grilled platforms where the stairways reversed direction. All the while, she watched the tiny white speck of the boat, seemingly immobile now that it was so far away, but undoubtedly narrowing the distance to the node with each minute. As she worked her way down, she had plenty of time to think about what was going through the delegate's head. She was sure now that it was Weir. It did not really surprise her that he wanted to swim. It was what everyone who studied the jugglers yearned for. But why make this unofficial attempt now, when a little gentle persuasion would have made it possible anyway? Given Takhtonburi's eagerness to please the delegates, it would not have been beyond the bounds of possibility for a swimming expedition to be organized. The Corps would have protested, but just like Naki, they would have been given a forceful lesson in the refined art of political compromise. But evidently Weir hadn't been prepared to wait. It all made sense at any rate. The times when he had dodged away from the party before must all have been abortive attempts to reach the jugglers, but only now had he seen his opportunity. Naki reached the water level, where jetties floated on ceramic-sheathed pontoons. Most of the boats were suspended out of the water on cradles to save their hulls from unnecessary degradation. Fortunately, there was an emergency rescue boat already afloat. Its formerly white hull had the flaking, pea-green scab patterning of advanced rot, but it still had a dozen or so hours of seaworthiness in it. Naki jumped aboard, released the boat from its moorings, and fired up the thruster. In a moment, she was racing away from the jetty, away from the vast, stained edifice of the moat itself. She steered a course through the least viscous stretches of water, avoiding conspicuous rafts of green matter. She peered ahead through the boat's spray-drenched shield. It had been easy to keep track of Weir's boat when she had been 100 meters higher, but now she kept losing him behind swells or miniature islands of juggler matter. After a minute or so, she gave up trying to follow the boat, and instead diverted her concentration to finding the quickest route to the node. She flipped on the radio.
"Jota, this is Naki. I'm in the water, closing on Weir."
There was a pause, a crackle, then, "What's the status?" She had to shout over the abrasive thump, thump, thump of the boat, even though the thruster was nearly silent.
"I'll reach the node in 4 or 5 minutes. Can't see Weir, but I don't think it matters."
"We can see him. He's still headed for the node."
"Good. Can you spare some more boats in case he decides to make a run for another node?"
"They'll be leaving in a minute or so. I'm waking everyone I can."
"What about the other delegates?"
Sivaraksa did not answer her immediately.
"Most are still asleep. I have Amisha Crane and Simon Matsubara in my office, however. Let me speak to them."
"Just a moment," he said, after the same brief hesitation.
"Crane here," said the woman. "I think I'm chasing Weir. Can you confirm that?"
"He isn't accounted for," she told Naki. "But it'll be a few minutes until we can be certain it's him."
"I'm not expecting a surprise. Weir already had a question mark over him, Amisha. We were waiting for him to try something."
"Were you?" Perhaps it was her imagination, but Crane sounded genuinely surprised.
"Why? What had he done?"
"You don't know?"
"No." Crane trailed off.
He was one of us, Matsubara said. A good delegate. We had no reason to distrust him. Perhaps Naki was imagining this as well, but it almost sounded as if Matsubara had intended to say disciple rather than delegate. Crane came back on the radio. Please do your best to apprehend him, Naki. This is a source of great embarrassment to us. He mustn't do any harm. Naki gunned the boat harder, no longer bothering to avoid the smaller patches of organic matter. No, she said. He mustn't. 3. Something changed ahead. Naki? It was Jota Sivaraksa's voice. What? We've slowed his boat. From our vantage point, it looks as if he's reached the perimeter of the node. He seems to be circumnavigating it. I can't see him yet. He must be picking the best spot to dive in. But it won't work, will it? Sivaraksa asked. There has to be an element of cooperation with the jugglers. They have to invite the swimmer to enter the sea, or nothing happens. Maybe he doesn't realize that, Naki said under her breath. It was of no concern to her how closely Weir was adhering to the usual method of initiating juggler communion. Even if the jugglers did not cooperate, even if all Weir did was flounder in the thick green water, there was no telling the hidden harm that might be done. She had already grudgingly accepted the acceleration of the closure operation. There was no way she was going to tolerate another upset, another unwanted perturbation of the experimental system. Not on her watch. He stopped, Sivaraksa said excitedly. Can you see him yet? Naki stood up in her seat, even though she felt perilously out of balance. Wait. Yes, I think so. I'll be there in a minute or so. What are you going to do? Crane asked. I hesitate to say it, but Weir may not respond to rational argument at this point. Simply requesting that he leave the water won't necessarily work. Do you have a weapon? Yes, Naki said. I'm sitting on it. She did not allow herself to relax, but at least now she felt that the situation was slipping back into her control. She would kill Weir rather than have him contaminate the node. His boat was visible now only as a smudge of white, intermittently popping up between folds and hummocks of shifting green. Her imagination sketched in the details. Weir would be preparing to swim, stripping off until he was naked or nearly so. Perhaps he would feel some kind of erotic charge as he prepared for immersion. She did not doubt that he would be apprehensive, and perhaps he would hesitate on the threshold of the act, teetering on the edge of the boat before committing himself to the water. But a fanatic desire had driven him this far, and she doubted that it would fail him. Naki? Jota? Naki, he's moving again. He didn't enter the water. He didn't even look like he had any intention of swimming. He saw I was coming. I take it he's heading for the next closest node? Perhaps. But Jota Sivaraksa sounded far from certain. She saw the boat again. It was moving fast, much faster than it had appeared before, but that was only because she was now seeing lateral motion. The next node was a distant island framed by the background of the moat's encircling rim. If he headed that way, she would be hard behind him all the way there as well. No matter his desire to swim, he must realize that she could thwart his every attempt. Naki looked back. The twin towers framing the cut were smothered in a haze of sea mist, their geometric details smeared into a vague suggestion of haphazard complexity. They suggested teetering, stratified sea stacks, million-year-old towers of weathered and eroded rock guarding the narrow passage to the open ocean. Beneath them, winking in and out of clarity, she saw three or four other boats making their way into the moat. The ponderous teardrop of a passenger dirigible was nosing away from the side of one of the towers, the low dawn sun throwing golden highlights along the fluted lines of its gondola. Naki made out the sleek deltoid of the Voice of Evening shuttle, but it was still parked where it had landed. She looked back to the node where Weir had hesitated. Something was happening. The node had become vastly more active than a minute earlier. It resembled a green, steep-sided volcanic island that was undergoing some catastrophic seismic calamity. The entire mass of the node was trembling, rocking, and throbbing with an eerie regularity.